as this ball is cracked toward right center field. That one's going to go back-to-back homers. Here come the Braves in the ninth. Number 13 for Dansby.
Little bit too late with Ronald Acuna and Dansby Swanson going back-to-back in the ninth inning for the Atlanta Braves. It's good to have Acuna hit a home run. Dansby continues to swing a hot bat, but not enough as the Braves fall to the Pittsburgh Pirates last night and drop a game and a half behind the Philadelphia Phillies. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So the rubber game of the three-game set with the Pirates, 12:30 this afternoon, and Mike Foltynewicz on the mound.
Faulty.
Against Chris Archer. And
yeah, we need him to get out the funk that he's been in.
Yep.
Today. We need that to happen.
Yep, we do indeed. Especially after Kevin Gausman struggled again last night, got rocked early in the game, hit hard once more, gave up 12 hits in his time in the game, and they just had to leave him in to try to extend a little bit of time for starters to keep that bullpen a little bit rested. And after the game, Kevin Gausman said this about another shaky outing.
Just not doing a good job of, you know, keeping those big innings from happening, and, you know, just really had to grind out there today. And, you know, when you give them a five spot in the second, you know, definitely not what you're trying to do.
Well, no kidding.
I don't even know what to say behind that with John Freaky. Yeah, he had a rough night. There's no question about that.
You know, he had a rough outing the time before, the time before that, the time before that, the time before that, and the time before that.
Yes, it's safe to say that he's had a plethora of rough outings, and we need him to not have one no more. We need that to be it. We need to stop the bleed.
In the last six outings, Gausman's pitched 28 innings, given up 37 hits and 26 runs. I mean, that's just not acceptable. Not acceptable in anybody's world. And so, you know, as we all talk about Craig Kimbrell and the news that that came down last night, that Kimbrell has agreed to a three-year, $43 million deal with the Chicago Cubs, which has Braves fans feeling some kind of way, one way or the other, which is why at 929
Carl
The Game
Thomas,
on Twitter.
Look, Carl Thomas this morning, emotional.
Yeah. We are asking you the question, will the Atlanta Braves regret not signing Craig Kimbrell? And AJC said the Braves were a non-factor. 56% say yes, they could have won the NL East. 44% say no, he's past his prime. And you can go to our Twitter and vote on that right now at 929 The Game and jump into the conversation that's taking place in the comments. Of course, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line is always 404-741-0929. And we spent a lot of time early in the program, the majority of the early of the program, talking about this with the fans. And I said at the time, Hugh, I'm less angry than I am more confused as to what the team is doing. Are we ready to win now or not? Because if you're ready to win, it's, to me, if you believe, oh, he's not that good, he's 31 or whatever it is, or maybe the price is too high, to me, you're either going to take the risk or you're not going to take the risk.
Well, I think if ready to win means win the World Series, I would say not yet. I would say not yet because you don't have enough experience with this club to do that. And I think a small sampling size was the Dodgers series that we had. I look at that and say, yeah, if we're talking World Series, not yet. But we're competitive, and we're gaining experience. You know, when we were talking to Steve Holman, he said something that clicked for me, and it's kind of what I'm thinking about the Braves, and that's this. He said he doesn't remember that long ago where the Golden State Warriors weren't that good. Then you go out and you draft some good young players, and they grow, and they become a dominant juggernaut. They become a dynasty. You know, that's the thing that we as fans – tend to forget, like the teams that we're talking about that are good now and that are sustaining this success, they're dynasties. That didn't happen overnight. That takes patience and that takes time. And I understand that, you know, somebody just called with, damn it, Hugh, we're tired of this. We want to win now. I get that. But it doesn't work like that. It does. It just doesn't. You know, think about this. Back in the day, not that long ago, when people talked about how you couldn't win a championship shooting threes. Remember that era? That wasn't that long ago. And now you have one of the best, if not the best, three-point shooter that has ever played the game. Dropped 47 on the team last night, still couldn't win because they were just hurt. It takes time to build dynasties. The Patriots, for all the stuff we talk about them, as much as we hate them, Tom Brady is the constant on that team. But they have a philosophy and they have a program that they follow to have the kind of success that you have. If you want a dynasty, that's what it is. If you want to win now, and not have something that's sustained. I get that, but I don't even think that they're in that position. That's what you look at and you see.
So what
Cubs.
Are we trying to do? That's why I'm confused.
You're
Tell
trying,
me what I'm trying to do.
I just told you, John, you're trying to build something that's going to be sustainable
so this year,
for a long
period
of time.
We're not trying to win
this
year.
No, you're competing. You're seeing – right now you're gaining experience. You're getting good. Everything from last year on is a plus. That's what you're doing. This is the thing that – and fans, help me understand this. How do you go from one season – to I don't think you're going to win over 500 games. I remember having conversations when we were talking about the Braves and thinking, oh, they're not going to be that good this year. Oh, my gosh, they're pretty good. Y'all need to go out and win a World Series right now, just as you're constructed. Right now, go
because
out and get some pieces.
Because we went through three seasons of total
I get that.
Dog poopy.
I get that.
And built with all these drafts, and now this was supposed to be the time that all this young pitching came to the fore.
And it's here. And it's to that point, John, you got three guys that you looked at last year that were on the upswing, on the uptick. And what, two of them aren't on the uptick? One of them moved to the bullpen because he was struggling early on. Sean Newcomb. I don't get that. I don't understand. Now, listen, again, not like trying to disrespect any fan for having their passion, but I don't – you have to be somewhat patient with this because now you go from – zero expectations to winning the NL East last year to now we need to win the World Series. And there's not a team that's constructed. Even the Houston Astros didn't do it that way. The Dodgers haven't done it that way. I mean, so I don't understand that, and I don't understand why everybody is so upset to get one person there, the closer, Kimbrel, when we're having trouble with our starting pitching. We can't even get them to go long innings.
Well, get both of them. I mean, why not?
But that's what I'm saying.
Money's not an issue.
But who do we have on the show? A pitcher we were talking to a couple weeks ago. Was it Glavin?
You mean John Smoltz?
No. The point I'm making is this: when I hear stories, when I'm watching the game, and I hear Glavin and guys talk about becoming the pitchers that they were.
Paul Bird? I mean,
No. I'm just saying in general. John, talking to Glavin, just listening to them speak.
All right.
They talk about how. They made their lumps in the bullpen and how they developed certain things in the bullpen, mm-hmm. how they took their lumps. Then when they came back to the starting pitching, it was easier for them. This is all a process. You know, all these guys that we're talking about that we want to get and everything, how do we not know that we might have one of those guys if we let him take his lumps, go through the growing pains? It's amazing to me how, as fans, we are so caught up in guys that might be a little bit past their prime, and we don't even want to give the young guys an opportunity to show what they could do.
All right, well, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's why I'm confused. If you want to do that, then do that. Then don't sign Dallas Keuchel and get rid of Josh Donaldson. Quit taking half measures. Either jump with both feet into the pool and try and make a run at it, or let's go ahead
What up until this point, from last year to now,
right.
What have the Braves done to make you feel like they've pushed their chips all the way into the middle of the table? I mean, if anything, we're the ones, as fans and as radio analysts,
Let me answer. I think they're a better team this year than won the NL East last year, all right?
Okay.
Okay, so.
But they regressed in the pitching, and they're still in second place in the NL East.
Right, and so I think you make a run at – see, that's what I want to know. I mean, are you either you're going to make a run at winning the NL East again – and maybe hoping you get lucky in the playoffs, and maybe the Dodgers get knocked out by, let's say, the Cubs or the Brewers or something, and the next thing you know, you're in the NLCS against somebody other than them. You either make a run at this or you don't, and I think we're stuck in between is what
you
I'm
know
saying.
What, you know what I'm hearing, John, from you, and I think you speak for most of the fans, ifs and maybes. You just said if the Dodgers get knocked out. Why not build a stronger club so that way, no matter what happens, you can compete because you've taken your lumps and you've earned the right to be
again,
there.
Again, I just said I'm okay with that. I don't understand the half measures.
What's the half measures, though? Donaldson?
Yeah, Donaldson's a half
measure. You need
measure.
To pop in your bat. We talked about that last year. Before Ronald Acuna or Ozzie Albies did what they did, we went into the season thinking, oh, where are we going to get the power at in the lineup?
All right, we didn't know about Austin Riley. I understand
okay, so
that.
Now,
I mean, I understand that.
But now,
I'm just saying,
you,
now that you see
you
Austin
add,
Riley –
you add Donaldson
right.
because you didn't know it. You heard about Austin Riley in the minors.
Okay, well, so if you add Donaldson, I think you add another piece, and you go, hey, we're going to make a run at this. But to stop after that is which is where we're at.
Because, John, I'm telling you, because your pitching puts you in a position that you didn't think that you were anticipating yourself to be in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. That's not me knowing anybody that works for the Braves. That's me giving you my opinion on what happened. That's all this is. So, you know, anybody out there, you don't have to agree with what I'm saying, but what I'm seeing from what was given us last year, from the sampling size that we got last year, from Gosman, from Foltynewicz, from Newcomb, was that these were guys that we were going to be able to depend on.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out like
that. Well, I guess if you're not, that's to my point. If you're not going to go out and make a run at Kimbrel, and you could have probably at least matched what the Cubs offered, if you're not going to do that because of whatever reason, he's too expensive, he's too old, at 31, I don't think he's too old, you don't think he's all that good, that's fine, I get that. But then there's no reason to justify, in my opinion, going out and getting Dallas Keuchel because, again, I think it's another half measure.
Well, if you go out and get Dallas Keuchel, John, it's because right now, again, your starting pitching has put you in a bind.
Mm-hmm.
They put you in a bind. You're still trying to compete. This is the thing. Look at it like the scale, the justice scale.
Right.
You're trying to weigh competing with the guys that you have here and the contributions that they're making and still keep your future goals intact.
Yeah, but see, that's how I view the scale. I think you're trying to compete and not spend any money.
And you know what? To be honest, that's how most people see it. I don't see it that way. I see it as you have come into a situation, Alex Anthopoulos, and you looked at it and said, okay, on the surface, when he got here, okay, we got some good pieces. We're not ready to compete. Let's let the young guys play.
Okay, well, then.
Let me finish. So the young guys come up. And you're like, oh, heck, this is more than I expected it to be. But at the same time, we have to allow this to develop and grow like in a Petri dish. This is like a fungus growing in a Petri dish. And you have to allow the fungus to grow. And you look at the pitching that you had last year and the guys that I just mentioned, and they regressed for you. So that puts you that sets you back a little bit. And now you're looking like, okay, we still want to stay competitive, but we got to stay competitive where it doesn't mortgage our future. That's all it is, because you know coming in, if they're trying to get somebody, the first thing, if I'm another club, I'm coming after your farm system. I'm coming after the young guys. I'm trying to get some of your young pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not willing to give those up. I'm not. So I have to balance trying to compete with keeping my future plans alive. That's how I see it.
Well, I will say this. Craig Kimbrel goes to the Cubs 3 years, $43 million. Dallas Keuchel, you know, we've heard a lot of rumors. The AJC comes in and basically says the Braves are a non-factor.
My man Carlo Carbro said, is there a third option?
Yeah, I know. Right? And so we'll see what happens with Keuchel here. But Kevin Gausman gets raked again yesterday. He's been just terrible. He's been so bad that I just threw my hands up last night after the second inning and said, just cut the guy. I mean, because at some point, I'd rather see Kyle Wright out there getting, you know, beat around at six consecutive starts than Kevin Gausman, who's not part of my future plans. Because, you know, if you want the kids to take their lumps, then let the kids take their lumps. But figure out one or the other. Track me one way or the other. Either say I'm going to stand up and compete and try and make a run at this thing with this young lineup. Because it is interesting, isn't it, though? Chuck Hernandez must be somewhere kind of chuckling because, you know, remember he got fired as the pitching coach and you bring in Rick Kranitz. Well, the pitching has kind of gone backwards a little bit this year. And Hugh, you're right about that. But isn't it kind of interesting, Hugh? Now, you can't expect. What has been the input of the youngsters? What's the impact of the youngsters on the Braves? I never would have said, ever, that when it comes to Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies and Austin Riley and Ronald Acuna, that the youngsters' impact would have been position players and position players with power. That hitting and position players, because it was all about the pitching, but it's been the position players with power.
Yeah, that's the ebb and flow of baseball. I look at guys like Juan Soto and all the young guys that have come up and have contributed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different. This era of baseball is a lot different than it has been in the past.
Yeah, with a lot of home runs.
Yeah, it's a lot of young guys coming up. And they're competing right now. And they're not – it's not like that old guard where you say, oh, well, you know, he's young. He's got to have to go through his lumps, and they're just trying to get him day-to-day and then send him back down.
Right.
They're contributing right now, and they're becoming big parts of your overall plan. Like, you know, we talk about Austin Riley. He has to factor in huge for the future of the Atlanta Braves. No doubt about that.
Probably at third base, though, and not left field, you would think.
Yeah. But another thing too, John. When I listen to like the young catcher that they just got, baseball is going the route of other sports where you have to be multifaceted in the position that you're able to play,
mm-hmm.
and that makes you more valuable, and that's what I'm seeing when you see a guy like Austin Riley going from third to left field and all over the place, they want him to be able to do more than just one play one position.
Mm-hmm. All right. No, eventually I think, you know, that's probably the plan, you guess. I mean, I think eventually the plan is to have Ronald Acuna in right. And maybe Pache plays center, and maybe you go out and get a left fielder. I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me that that might be the direction they're going. But as to the team this year, you know, it's like, okay, you want to compete and you want to try and all this balancing stuff. And I'm just like, can we win? How about we go and make a run?
No, listen. And again, I am not trying to sit here. And
if you told me that we had somebody in the minors that could become a closer, right now I just haven't seen anybody.
Got to give it time, John. I mean, we got still like 100 games, a hundo, something like that. You got to give it time. And I know it's hard. I get it. It's hard, but that's sports.
Hey, how'd you like a chance to win to see the Rolling Stones live in concert in New Orleans, the No Filter Tour? Tickets are on sale now. If you go to our website, 92andthegame.com, you can register for a chance to win a free trip for two. It includes round-trip airfare, two floor tickets, two-night hotel stay, and a $500 gift card. Great prize. And just go to 929thegame.com and register, and maybe you'll win. Next up, does Atlanta United have a new problem with Ezekiel Barco? We're going to ask that of Jason Longshore as we continue after a CBS Sports Minute and Boomer Esiason.
Barco spins out of traffic to the top of the arc to Joseph Martinez. Joseph may have gotten stepped on, lost control, goes back to Barco, shoots, scores! Golazo!
Mike Connie, back when Ezekiel Barco was scoring goals for Atlanta United and not the Argentine U-20 team. Welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Does Atlanta United have a Barco problem? They may. We'll catch up with Jason Longshore in just a moment. And by the way, you may not know this, but Joseph Martinez played in a soccer game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium last night against Tata Martino. Mexico and Venezuela played at Mercedes-Benz last night, and Mexico won the game 3-1.
I wonder if they – well, I'm pretty sure they got a chance to chop it up because I'm pretty sure they both were wearing the rings or had the rings in the vicinity. So they probably chopped it up a little bit.
You know, it's one of the great things about Mercedes-Benz Stadium as a soccer venue is that we're going to see more and more international matches and hopefully World Cup matches in just a couple of years here. Let's get to Jason Longshore, who joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. He is brought to you by Heineken 0.0. Great taste and zero alcohol. Morning to you, Jason.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing awesome. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Get a little bit of a break from MLS league play. We have some Open Cup coming up next week, but good month for Atlanta United, so I'm doing well.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about it. John alluded to the fact that Ezekiel Barco, there's been a lot of conversation about him, and I was listening to our man Mike Conte yesterday, and he basically said there is no threat of Ezekiel Barco leaving Atlanta United this year, but in the long term, with him playing as well as he has been playing, what could that potentially mean for the young player?
He's going to get attention. I mean, that's how this game is played. You know, if you thought about it with an NBA player, for example, that was in this type of situation, you would be getting interest from what, 2, 3, maybe 4 teams that could actually make a run at signing this player. For a player like Ezekiel Barco and the world of soccer, it's 3, 4, 5 teams in 4, 5, 6 different countries who are interested. So the attention's going to be there. And when you go and perform the way you did at a U-20 World Cup, people are going to be interested. It would take a pretty ridiculous offer right now for Atlanta United, I think, to pick up that phone. But that's the type of performance he had. And at a World Cup on that stage wearing that Argentina kit, he did everything that you would want to see in a young player showing that they're ready to take that next step in their career.
Talking with Jason Longshore, Ezekiel Barco, one of the stars, even though Argentina knocked out by Mali in the U-20 World Cup, that is 18- and 19-year-olds, as they get you know, their chance to see the future of soccer. And he is certainly one player who has captured the attention of the big clubs over in Europe to watch him. And so you're saying, like Mike, that he will be with Atlanta United the remainder of the year, that you don't think there are going to be any offers between now and
– See, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing is we're all guessing. This is what I love is that after going through the Miguel Almiron transfer saga, now Atlanta, I think, understands what a transfer saga can be, and we're already worried about Barco.
Mm-hmm.
Could it happen? Sure. It absolutely could have an offer come in that is that offer that makes you stand up. I don't think it's going to happen this fast. I think – you're probably talking about the winter window or next summer. I think it's a little early for that right now.
Yeah, we'll get back to Atlanta United in just a moment. I want to stay in the U-20s for a second and pick Jason's brain as a soccer expert. The United States U-20 team has, they won in CONCACAF by beating Mexico and kind of put themselves on the world stage. And in this World Cup, they've gone out and managed to make the quarterfinals and just beat a heavily favored France team. Does this speak to the future of soccer, men's soccer in America, that this U-20 team is doing this well?
Yeah, I think where the U-20s are right now, what their performance is showing is the steps that have been made in the development side of the game in the United States. So the pool for talented young players is wider and deeper than it's ever been. You have more options. You have a lot of talented players that were age eligible for this team who didn't ultimately make this final roster. Andrew Carlton is one of those. There's a number of players playing in Major League Soccer regular minutes who didn't get onto this roster. What the U.S. is probably looking for is what most countries around the world are looking for, is that next superstar. And that's the thing, that it's really hard to create a developmental system that creates that magic special player. When the U.S. has one of those, then it goes over the top, and you're talking about a team that can compete for a World Cup.
When you look at the players from Atlanta United that didn't get called up for their national teams, what was the one guy that surprised you the most? You know, the guy that didn't get called up, that was the biggest surprise for you?
Miles Robinson. And the fact that he wasn't brought in at least to the training camp and playing in the friendly last night against Jamaica. If Greg Berhalter had made the decision coming in, look, Miles Robinson has never appeared for a senior national team. He's never been into a camp for a national team outside of the U-23s. Okay, that's fine. I'm not ready for him to play in the Gold Cup in a championship competition yet. That's fine. But you had an opportunity to bring him into camp, and you had an opportunity to play him in a friendly against Jamaica. I feel like it was a wasted opportunity, because Miles Robinson has been the best American center back in Major League Soccer this season.
We're talking with Jason Longshore. He and Mike Connie, of course, the play-by-play team for Atlanta United. And we will have live coverage next Tuesday night on 92.9 The Game of Atlanta United and the Charleston Battery of that U.S. Open Cup game. I know that, and we've talked about this, Jason, that Atlanta United puts a lot of emphasis on other competitions besides Major League Soccer, this being one of them in this U.S. Open Cup. As we look ahead to this, kind of walk the fans through what the U.S. Open Cup is and how it works out.
So the U.S. Open Cup's the oldest tournament in the United States for soccer. It's one of the oldest cup competitions in the world, actually. And the winner of it gets a berth in the CONCACAF Champions League. So for next season, if Atlanta United wants to get back to CONCACAF and get further than the quarterfinals, they have to win MLS Cup, win the Supporters' Shield, have the best regular season record in the other conference, or win the Open Cup. And the Open Cup's the shortest route. You're coming in the round of 32. You have an opponent in the Charleston Battery who are a lower division team who take this tournament very seriously. They've made a final before as a lower division team. It's not an easy out, and they have a lot of continuity. Their manager, Mike Anhauser, has been there for two decades now. So Atlanta United's going to have to go in and, I think, play more of the first team, at least in certain spots, because you want that continuity. And with this break from league play between June 1st and June 26th, you'd love to get this game against Charleston, win it, and get another game in the break so you can keep this flow going, because the team is playing so well and so smart, getting their head around this tactical system of Frank DeBoer. You'd like to get more games to do that.
We're talking with Jason Longshore as they get ready for the game next Tuesday against Charleston Battery in the U.S. Open Cup before returning to MLS play on the 26th of June against Toronto. So this team, though, we saw Joseph Martinez played last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with Venezuela against Mexico. You're seeing Ezequiel Barco play for Argentina. And, of course, you know, we see the international impact of Atlanta United, and now an opportunity maybe to make a different mark with the U-20 teams and with Atlanta United, you know, going forward in this U.S. Open Cup, possibly getting back into CONCACAF. Is this part of, because this is only year three for us, is this all part of the, we have to kind of look at Atlanta United, or at least I do, Jason, as more than just an MLS team, but as a soccer brand in multiple branches worldwide?
That's the goal. I mean, you want Atlanta United to be a known quantity around the world, because that's going to help you on so many different fronts. I mean, when you develop young local talent, people are going to see that Atlanta United brand attached to it and know that it means quality. Miguel Almirón going to Newcastle and playing well strengthens that brand. Ezequiel Barco going to a U-20 World Cup and doing what he did strengthens that brand. So now when the next Pity Martinez, the next high-ranking player out of South America, gets an offer from Atlanta United, it has more meaning. And this is, I think, what Darren Eales' ultimate goal was when he came to Atlanta, was to transcend what Major League Soccer teams have historically been. I mean, the LA Galaxy are a worldwide brand because they signed players at the end of their career. They signed the David Beckham. So now they have Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Atlanta United wants to become that worldwide brand for developing talent. It's a harder road to do, but it's going to benefit not just Atlanta United, but it's going to benefit American soccer as a whole, because it's just going to, I think, make people stand up and take notice that this is a league that is very serious and very competitive.
Hey, Jason, as always, enjoy the trip down to Charleston and come home with another victory.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
All right, Jason Longshore, brought to you by Heineken 0.0, great taste, and zero alcohol. And again, next Tuesday night, Atlanta United, the Charleston Battery. Kick is at 7:30 live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So here's where we stand with that. You know, I mean, Atlanta has to understand, Atlanta is going to be a big soccer town as we grow. Again, only year three, but it's not just Atlanta United. It's also that stadium hosting Mexico and Venezuela last night. You know, there is going to be World Cup action here.
Yeah, and the fact that soccer is growing at a fever pitch, at a fever rate, it's phenomenal. I hear a lot of families and mothers and fathers talking about their son playing soccer and going overseas to play with different clubs and things like that. This is a big deal. And it's not going to be that long, John Fricke, before we start having some really, really good American soccer players. Remember a few years ago we were talking about how we're not really recognized for having really great soccer players here?
Mm-hmm, right.
That's about to change. Mm-hmm. And it's going to change really quickly.
Yeah, and as Jason said, it's when we get our Messi, our Ronaldo.
Yes, that's when it's going to really pop for everybody.
A lot of people wanted to put that on Landon Donovan, then they wanted to put it on Christian Pulisic. You know, I mean, I don't know that those guys are the kind of breakout guy, but when we get our Michael Jordan of soccer, who kind of becomes that world superstar.
Yeah, it's going to be different. We're going to be looked at different as far as soccer's concerned.
All right, a lot to get into on this very busy Thursday. We mentioned the Braves, of course, still kind of front and center with an afternoon game in Pittsburgh and all of that's going on around that. But also, looking ahead to the weekend, you got the Tycoon Music Festival at Lakewood Amphitheater, and you got a bunch of movies coming out. And I know that you're kind of – are you primed to go into any movies this weekend?
Yeah, you know what? It's a lot of movies coming out, and Netflix is about to drop another gem that I saw the trailer for this morning. It's a lot going on this weekend.
We have to chop that up next
week. Yes, we do.
Yeah, a little bit. We'll talk about that as we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 90.9 The Game.
Dry your eyes, Eric. It doesn't justify what you've done.
You've no idea what I've done.
I know that you took the things that mean the most.
You know, we were talking about, welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh. We were talking earlier, and Steve Holman mentioned it too, about this being the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And what the greatest D-Day, greatest is a relative term, but the best D-Day movie is, one of them, Hugh, is, it's not so much a D-Day movie as it just has the first, 45 minutes.
Is that the longest day?
Yeah, there's a lot of D-Day movies out there.
Yeah.
The first 45 minutes or so of Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, when they hit the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was well, not dope, but it was just enlightening.
Yeah, because it took you.
Yes.
If you've never seen Saving Private Ryan, it goes from beyond D-Day and the landing at Normandy to trying to do something else in the movie. But the first 45 minutes are the landing from a point of view perspective of Tom Hanks on the lander and shaking and into that the viper nests of the machine guns of the Germans.
Man,
it's just frightening.
And when you see that scene, John, and then you hear the stories, because there's only a few of the men left that actually fought. Well, I think they're in the 90s or something.
Yeah, well, you have to be in your mid-90s.
But to think of that sacrifice that they made, you're talking about land, sea, and air, that massive invasion of over 150,000-plus people, to know that when you take that beach and to know what you're up against,
mm-hmm.
knowing that there's a strong chance that you're going to die. Like, you're not coming home. And to still do that, I can't imagine, you know, what they were feeling. I cannot imagine that. And you know, that's when you think about the sacrifices that were made for us to have our freedoms, You respect that. You have a tremendous amount of respect for that because could not imagine being in a situation knowing that, hey, man, you know what? When we hit this beach, you're going to be getting shot at, and you're probably going to die. You're probably not going to go home, but you go out and you do it anyway. So, you know, respect to everybody who's in the service and has made sacrifices for our freedoms.
Yeah, if you want to shoot me a suggestion on a D-Day film, I will say, yeah, the Longest Day and others that are out there, I know that the first Saving Private Ryan, if you've never seen it, is worth it for the first 45 minutes. I mean, not that the whole movie isn't good, but that just takes you. I will say, be careful with little kids because it's gory and it's frightening. And
it's reality.
Yeah.
It's reality at its realest. Yes.
But you learn something, too. So anyway, I saw this trailer last night for a film. I don't normally get excited about movies. Overly excited about movies until I saw a trailer last night for a movie that's coming out. Now, it's coming out in September, but the trailer dropped yesterday for a movie called Ad Astra. A.D.
You're talking about with Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Saw that.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Saw that about an astronaut or something.
Yeah, I guess Tommy Lee Jones is out there, and he's got some solar project he's working on way out in the universe. In the solar system, and he's about to ruin everything, and so Brad Pitt has to go stop him, and it looks pretty darn good.
That's not one that really has moved the meter for me. I know the one that everybody's talking about this weekend, John, is The Dark Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And this is is this the Fox installment? Or this is the Fox installment, and I think this is the last movie where Fox has rights. And if I'm not correct on this, you know, I know Twitter's going to correct me on this, but I think this is the last movie where Fox has rights to the X-Men. Because this is the one reason why, and I know a lot of people are excited to see it. As a matter of fact, I was in the bullpen, and Bo Johnson asked me, was I going to see it? I'm not too excited to see this, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm a huge Marvel fan, and I've read the Dark Phoenix saga, and I don't know what this is because this isn't the Dark Phoenix saga. The Dark Phoenix saga involves the X-Men, which is Wolverine is involved with that because he plays a big part in it. You know, because he was a love interest of Jean Grey. And for the simple fact, there was a backstory in the original Dark Phoenix saga that they have, I can almost guarantee you, that is not in this movie. And so I don't know what this is going to be. I really don't. And I'm not excited to see it because the one thing that I think that where Marvel has hit on and they've done a tremendous job with is the fact that they've kept most of the storylines to some of the things. Now, they've changed a lot of, like, they changed the gauntlet, the Infinity Gauntlet, but it stayed somewhat true to the backstory of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
This one here, John Fricke, if you've ever read the Phoenix, Dark Phoenix saga, I don't think this one is even going to come close to being what the comic book ever was. I really don't. And the comic book was great. The comic book was extremely great, but I don't think it's going to come close.
Is that gonna kill you?
That's gonna. I don't think I'm. You know, I'm not. I don't think that I am excited to go watch it at the movie. I might wait till it come out on the bootleg.
Well, I know there's another Men in Black coming out in a couple of weeks, right?
That look like that's gonna be pretty good. That's gonna be pretty good.
Yeah, and then but the Maven wants to go see Rocket Man. I don't know. I'm just not.
I've heard bad reviews about Rocket Man.
Well, I heard that people who saw Rocket Man and saw Bohemian Rhapsody liked Bohemian Rhapsody more. I really like. Did you ever see Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yes, I did.
Bohemian Rhapsody. So, but she wants to go see Rocket Man. So it's like, okay,
it's something else that popped. You know, and it's funny because we were talking about Netflix the other day and their original content. Like, I get, like, feeds. I get, like, different alerts on my phone. And I just got an alert, and I saw the trailer for a movie that's dropping Friday on Netflix called I Am Mother.
I Am Mother.
Yes.
Nothing to do with Ma, that movie you just
saw.
No,
it's not. Ma was not that good. And from the premise of the trailer, it looks like a young lady was born in a facility and was taken care of by a robot. And it takes a lot of different twists and turns. That looks pretty good. Now, between the two, if I had to go see The Dark Phoenix and watch this Netflix movie, mm-hmm. I'm going to probably do the Netflix
thing. Is it like I Am Mother, like Ex Machina Part 2 or something?
So, you know what? That's funny that you mentioned. It's probably like there's a robot in it,
uh-huh.
And the robot is basically taking care of this young girl. And she's taking care of this young girl until another human enters the story. I can't think of the young lady's name. Who was the girl's name that was in a Million Dollar Baby? Hilary Swank. Yes, it was Hilary Swank. Hilary Swank's done a few movies that were pretty good. She's in it. Mm-hmm. She's in this Netflix movie. So I'm more excited about seeing that, to be honest, than I am about seeing this Dark Phoenix saga. It's a couple other movies coming out this weekend. I know producer Abe, the producer, I'm sorry, gave us a list of things that are coming out this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And most of them I have no desire to see. The Secret Life of Pets 2?
No.
Animated follow-up to the 2016's fourth highest grossing film? No, I don't want to see that. The Last Black Man in San Francisco? The plot centers on the efforts of an African-American man, Jimmy, to reclaim his childhood home, a Victorian house in the Fillmore District, which was built by his grandfather. I have no interest in seeing that. You know, don't want to see that. And another one, Late Night. A talk show host hires a female staff writer to help smooth over concerns about workplace diversity. That might sound a little interesting. Now, but not so interesting that I'm going to actually pay money to go see it. I'm going to wait till that come out on the Fire Stick. And that's about it. Nothing. There's nothing that I see. Oh, yeah, and Shaft. Shaft's coming out, what, next week?
Oh, wait a minute now. Really?
Yes.
No.
Shaft is coming out next week.
No, sorry, no. I mean, no. Well, why can't they leave well enough alone?
Well, I'm kind of with you on that. This Shaft seems like they've taken a comedic route, which I'm kind of not cool with. Because growing up, Shaft meant it was Shaft. Who was it? Black Caesar.
Shaft.
Dolomite. John. It was like they meant something different growing up to us, you know, kids when we were growing up, African American kids when we were growing up in community. I don't know how I feel about this one. Samuel Jackson does great movies, but I've seen little snippets and some of the like the humor that they try to bring to it. I don't know if I want to watch Shaft and that's what it is. I don't know if I want to feel like laughing at a Shaft movie. Because the leather jacket and the afro was all that. The leather and the way that then and what did he drive? He drove a Mustang, didn't he? I think he drove a Mustang. Yeah, all of that. That was what you wanted to have when you were growing up. And to see this one, you know, trying to be funny with it. Yeah, I do like the Chevelle though.
Let 70s movies live.
Yeah,
in
I do 70s. Like the Chevelle though. I mean, Shaft driving that Chevelle that I think is a 71, 70 something Chevelle.
Yeah.
I do like that though.
But John Shaft belongs to the 70s with Dirty Harry and with Popeye Doyle. And all the, you know,
I remember Popeye Doyle. Who was it? Ed O'Neill?
No. That was Gene Hackman, French Connection.
Wait a minute. Ed O'Neill was Popeye Doyle, though, right? Wasn't he? Didn't he play Popeye Doyle?
They redid it? Oh, my God.
If I'm not mistaken, the dude that played Al Bundy was Popeye Doyle, right?
Well, not in the original films.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the original. But I think he did play Popeye Doyle.
Okay, I think he probably did.
Yeah. Okay. It was Abe, the producer, told me it was in a major TV movie.
Ah.
Shout out to Abe, the producer, and Orin the Sigma. All right.
All right, Braves fans, what do you think now? We've had a chance. We're going to update you on our poll about the Braves, and you can vote in the poll at 929 The Game. The question this morning, pretty simple. Will the Atlanta Braves regret not signing Craig Kimbrell? As we continue this morning on Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929thegame.com.
Nothing's ever going to just ride for 6 months and be smooth, that you don't have to work around things and try and, you know, get certain parts of your game back going. This is just kind of the one, you know, that was really, really good. And you know, now it's a little bump in the road, and we just got to fight through it.
Now, your game time traffic.
Hey, it's Stephanie Saul with APL Traffic, late for the Game Time Traffic Center's update, sponsored by Atlantic Station, APD. They were out there busy this morning working on a few scenarios, including that one that was out there for a while on the downtown connector at Spring Street. Also, they had a problem with 400 North at Lenox. Now the latest thing for you as you travel 400 North and Atlantic, they're going to be distracting you there with the flashing light activity, so watch for that. Looking for some fun this summer? Come to Atlantic Station for their summer event series. You can stretch under the sun at Yoga in the Park, create a masterpiece at Art at the Station, catch a flick under the stars at Movies in the District, and much, much more. Check it out at atlanticstation.com/events. From the Game Time Traffic Center, I'm Stephanie Stallworth on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's John and Hugh. Mornings.
Jeopardy's got a new champion. Jeopardy James is done. Emma Betcher ends this Jeopardy James. She is a user experience librarian from Chicago. Well, what the hell is a user experience librarian?
I don't know. Let's look it up on the Google.
Yes, I'd like to check out 50 Shades of Grey, and I'd like the user experience, please.
John and Hugh. Mornings. Sports Radio.